You're listening to Medscape's In Discussion series on Irritable Bowel Syndrome, a podcast where thought leaders and clinical experts share their diverse insights and practical ideas for optimizing patient care. This series is hosted by Dr. Lin Chang. Dr. Chang is the co-director of the G. Oppenheimer Center for Neurobiology of Stress and Resilience and vice chief of the Vache and Tamara Manoukian Division of Digestive Diseases at UCLA. Relevant disclosures can be found with the episode show notes on Medscape.com or the Medscape app. The topics and discussions are planned, produced, and reviewed independently of advertisers. This podcast is intended only for U.S. healthcare professionals.
Hello, I'm Dr. Lin Chang, and welcome to Medscape's In Discussion series on IBS. Today, we'll be discussing overlapping conditions with IBS with Dr. Magnus Simran. Dr. Simran is a professor of gastroenterology at the Department of Internal Medicine, Institute of Medicine, Sahlgrenska Academy at the University of Gothenburg. Welcome to In Discussion. Hi, Magnus. It's so great to have you join us today. You're so knowledgeable in the field and one of the leaders in our field. So I first want to start off with asking you, how did you become interested in IBS?
First of all, thank you for having me on the discussion. It will be a pleasure to discuss this with you, Lin. And why did I become interested in IBS? It's a little bit of a coincidence, actually. I started off as an internal medicine doctor, and then I decided, also a little bit by coincidence, that I wanted to be a gastroenterologist. And then I started doing research, and also a little bit by coincidence, they asked me to start a project on IBS. And there it was. So that's a little bit how it started. And I met the right people who steered me in the right direction, and I don't regret it at all. It's been a wonderful area to work in, I think.
Yeah, now many people are following in your footsteps. You've been a great mentor to many people. So I'm going to start talking about IBS in particular with its overlap with other conditions. And we know that IBS can coexist with gastrointestinal conditions, and it can also coexist with these non-gastrointestinal conditions where they have what we call extraintestinal symptoms. So I first want to ask you about the coexistence of IBS and other gastrointestinal disorders like GERD, gastroesophageal reflux disease, which is very common, inflammatory bowel disease, and celiac disease. Can you tell us about the overlap with these types of conditions?
Yeah, so, I mean, this overlap between these, what you can call organic gastrointestinal disorders and what we call functional gastrointestinal disorders or disorders of gut-brain interaction, as we prefer to call them today, among which IBS is one of the most common. This overlap is very common for all these conditions. So if I start off with inflammatory bowel disease, ulcerative colitis or Crohn's disease, and if you look at those patients when they are in what we call remission, when there is no active signs of inflammation, still a considerable proportion of the patients report gastrointestinal symptoms compatible with IBS. Actually, up to a third of these patients report ongoing symptoms compatible with IBS despite there is no sign of active inflammation. So this is very common and a very common clinical problem. If you look at celiac disease, the story is the same there. So if you look at celiac disease patients where the mucosa is healed after they started off with a gluten-free diet, roughly a third also there report gastrointestinal symptoms, and it's quite frequent that this is compatible with IBS, but also with other disorders of gut-brain interaction. And what is common for both the overlap between IBD, inflammatory bowel disease and IBS, and celiac disease and IBS is that there is an overlap then with psychological comorbidity there as well. It seems to be an important factor there in driving the symptoms, that the link with psychological comorbidity. And when it comes to reflux disease, also there, the theme comes again. The overlap is common. So it's actually been reported that there is a 30 to 40% overlap. So within these organic conditions, having IBS-like symptoms is very common.
It seems like there's two steps in managing a patient. First of all, when they first come in, you have to determine if they have IBS or the inflammatory bowel disease or they have celiac. Then when you establish that they have inflammatory bowel disease or celiac, then the other issue is, could they have the overlap, which, like you said, the IBD or celiac could be in remission and they could still have IBS. How do you think that occurs?
We don't really know this, but there are some ideas behind this that having an inflammation can increase the sensitivity in your gut and create some kind of, if you call it, memory in the gut, so that what happened before is there all the time, if you put it like that. And also the brain can be involved as well. So you can have brain-gut interactions playing a role in the symptom generation of having more chronic symptoms, despite the fact that the inflammation is not active right now. But we don't know the exact mechanism why this happens, but the inflammation probably plays a role in starting this anyway.
Yeah. You mentioned about psychological symptoms playing a role in having these comorbid or coexisting conditions. How do you think that plays a role in predisposing someone to get it, or they get these conditions and they get some symptom-related anxiety or other symptoms? How do you see that?
I think it can be both. I think we know now that there is a bidirectional interaction. We know for a long time, but it's more appreciated now that there is a bidirectional interaction between the brain and the gut. So I guess it goes both ways. Psychological factors can predispose you to these conditions or this overlap, but also the other way around. Having chronic gastrointestinal symptoms may predispose you to develop psychological symptoms. So I guess it goes in both directions. But the important thing from a clinical point of view is that there is this overlap. So you need probably to address both when you treat the patients.
Because I would think that for inflammatory bowel disease, and I've seen this, even people with very inactive, close to remission or very just microscopic inflammation, they keep getting treated with different IBD type of agents. And to even acknowledge or recognize they could have IBS as an overlap, would you consider that you would treat them differently?
I think so. If you don't see any inflammation, I mean, there is no, to the best of, to what I think, we should not treat the inflammation more aggressively because there are a lot of side effects. We should probably then move more towards what we can call IBS-like treatment or a type of treatment for IBS. Even though there are very few formal studies supporting this, this is more logical than to treat visual hypersensitivity, brain-gut interactions, and so forth. That's more logical when we're in that stage.
Yeah, because you can continue the IBD treatment, the gluten-free diet for celiac. They just want to treat their other persistent symptoms. If you think they're due to more like an IBS DGBI than the quote organic disease. I wanted to touch on GERD and IBS because GERD is in the esophagus, but many of the patients have lower GI symptoms. So it's not really the same, potentially not the same pathophysiology as inflammatory bowel disease or celiac. It's just that these two conditions are very common. So is that just really why you may see it in one individual?
Part of the overlap is probably due to being two very common disorders. But again, here, there is, if you look at the literature, there is some support for this overlap being more common than just being two common disorders. So probably also here, brain-gut interactions might play a role, the same type of mechanisms underlying symptom reporting, symptom perception, etc. So maybe a more sensitive gut and a central nervous system processing information from the gut differently than in other individuals.
Yeah, that's a great point. And so their perception of their symptoms may be somewhat amplified and there's more attention to them and they're more bothersome. Well, there's also an overlap of IBS and other disorders of gut-brain interaction. So moving away from these, quote, organic conditions, but looking at the overlap of IBS and functional dyspepsia or functional heartburn or other conditions, how does the presence of overlapping disorders affect symptom severity, quality of life? How are you going to treat these patients?
Yeah, so this overlap within what we didn't call the DGBI, the disorder of gut-brain interaction family, with conditions in different parts of the gastrointestinal tract or different regions of the gastrointestinal tract, has been studied more and more in recent years, and we have learned that having DGBIs in several different regions is clearly associated with a more severe, if you put it like that, phenotype, with more severe gastrointestinal symptoms, but also more severe non-gastrointestinal symptoms, more severe psychological distress, reduced quality of life, and also more healthcare utilization. So it definitely predicts a more severe disease phenotype, if you put it like that. Clearly affects the outcome for the patient, and also when also for us as doctors, these are more, if you put it like that, severe patients.
Yeah, they definitely have more severe symptoms, and they're going to use healthcare much more often. There's more healthcare utilization, more visits, not to just a gastroenterologist or primary care physician, but other specialists as well.
And even more surgeries, which is interesting.
And more surgeries, yeah.
That's quite interesting as well.
Yeah, do you think that some of these surgeries may not need to have been done?
That's what I think.
Yeah. Is there certain types of patients that are more predisposed to having these overlapping conditions? For example, women may be more likely to have it, or is there other factors that are involved?
It's again more, I mean, there is this overlap with psychological comorbidity and also having symptoms outside the gastrointestinal tract. So it's not more clearly, I mean, it's not clearly related to females versus males. It's more clearly related to these other comorbid conditions outside the gastrointestinal tract. So that's more important in this overlap.
So just thinking about a lot of the healthcare providers that are seeing these patients, and many times IBS is diagnosed not necessarily by the Rome criteria, but just knowing that they have recurrent abdominal pain, they have diarrhea, constipation. But then now knowing that these patients may present with esophageal symptoms or upper abdominal symptoms, what do you feel is the best approach for healthcare providers when they're seeing these patients and trying to delineate what diagnosis they have and how are they going to treat these patients? What advice would you give?
First of all, I think, I mean, the clinical history is key, of course, to really address the different symptoms and try to pinpoint which of these symptoms are the most bothersome for the patients. And sometimes these are the symptoms that you should address more carefully when you treat the patients. In general, a holistic approach is very important to also address symptoms outside the gastrointestinal tract and try to get an entire a picture of the entire clinical picture, putting all of this together when you decide on treatment options. And if there are more, you know, targeted symptoms for in a specific part of the GI tract, then you can use more targeted therapies. But if you have a more generalized symptom pattern in different parts of the gastrointestinal tract, then you need to think more broadly. Again, think more at brain-gut interactions, maybe target use such treatment options such as neuromodulators, behavioral therapies, etc., to address the entire clinical picture.
Yeah, that's a good point, because if they have symptoms of upper or lower gut or, you know, esophageal symptoms, you can think about treatments that can hit all these targets. But it's also important to recognize when you're making the diagnosis that they don't just have IBS, they could have functional heartburn, for example, or functional dyspepsia. And you can treat them with over-the-counter remedies also, and also more of these systemic type treatments, whether the behavioral or their neuromodulators. But it sounds like you believe that you need some centrally acting treatment when you're trying to treat multiple conditions.
Most of the patients, that's the case. But of course, sometimes there is one or two symptoms that really predominates the picture, and then you can target that symptom. But then you need to tell the patient that now you get this therapy, and this is for that symptom. So you don't give the patient, a PPI if you think that the reflux symptoms are the worst, and you say, here is something for your symptoms. And then they think they should help everything, and then they are dissatisfied, of course.
You know, that is such an important point, because I spend a lot of time with patients, but they'll come back sometimes and they'll say, I thought this medication or this treatment was for this symptom, and I thought I had explained it well, and maybe I had not explained it well. So it is really important to tell a patient why you're giving them a treatment, what the treatment is, and what symptom you're actually looking to improve, and also the time frame, because I think many times patients feel like these treatments should work pretty quickly, and they don't, especially for behavioral therapy or for neuromodulators. They take a while.
Yeah, that's a very important point. I mean, to say that, I mean, the positive effect of, let's say, neuromodulators, that will last. I mean, it takes up to a month before you can actually feel something positive. And what is also important is if you think about side effects with neuromodulators, they often kick in immediately. And if you haven't told the patient that when you prescribe the medication, he or she will throw it away, of course, when you come home, having side effects the first couple of days and no positive effects. So that's very important with information. Otherwise, you will fail.
That's why often I'll use a lower dose, but I'll tell them I'm using a lower dose because I just want to make sure you tolerate it. But then we need to increase it to the usual dose to treat the symptoms, because patients could think about getting that off the medication or the treatment earlier because they're expecting, you know, to see a response. Well, I definitely think realistic expectations is really important to review with the patient.
Agree.
Now, IBS can also coexist with non-gastrointestinal conditions, such as fibromyalgia, migraine headaches, interstitial cystitis. What do you think the factors are that are contributing to these overlapping disorders for our gastrointestinal tract, but also outside of the GI tract?
I mean, here again, we're talking about interactions between what happens in the body and what happens in our central nervous system. Factors such as central sensitization, abnormal CNS processing of signals, neural signals from the body plays a role here. And we can call it brain-gut or brain-body interactions that are failing in these patients or are abnormal. There are also some genetic risk factors for this overlap between different, if you call it, non-GI functional syndromes such as fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue syndrome, etc. There was, for instance, a Swedish study where they looked at genetic risk factors in fibromyalgia patients and demonstrated there were some shared genetic risk factors with IBS and chronic fatigue syndrome. So again, a mixed pathophysiology with genes playing a role, upregulation CNS processing of signals from the body, and again, an overlap with psychological comorbidity is also very common in these patients.
Often people wonder or ask which one comes first. You get IBS first, and then it follows by fibromyalgia and migraines, or does one precede the other? What is your review of the literature and your experience with this?
I think it can be in both directions, and that's also the same for psychological factors and IBS. There are studies, long-term follow-up studies, looking at psychological factors and IBS, and it seems to be go both ways. So IBS can come first and then psychological factors and vice versa. So again, supporting this bi-directional communication between the brain and the gut. And when it comes to these non-GI somatic comorbidities, I guess the same holds true there. Fibromyalgia comes first sometimes and IBS comes first sometimes. It differs between patients and there is no clear pattern there.
So you've mentioned psychological factors as playing an important role on these comorbidities, this coexistence. And we also are talking to Lori Kiefer, who is well known as a GI health psychologist, about that. But I want to ask you this question. You know, many times you could be in this situation where you're thinking, well, they have symptom-related psychological symptoms like anxiety, which is completely understandable. If you have these unpredictable, hard-to-control symptoms, you could develop some of these worries or concerns. Do you think that treating the symptoms of the gastrointestinal symptoms will then lower the psychological symptoms if they're driven by the gastrointestinal symptoms? Or do you think it's always important to treat the psychological symptoms at the same time, or even sometimes first? Depends which one you think is really important. How do you approach that? How do you see that?
This is a very good comment, because I think sometimes you can actually, I mean, patients with, let's say, severe diarrhea, and they get anxious because of that, then it's sufficient just to treat their diarrhea, and then maybe these psychological factors will, if you put it like that, heal. Just by treating their diarrhea. So you need to address not only central factors, but you need to address the peripheral factors, if you put it like that, and treat these symptoms as well, because this symptom-related anxiety or symptom-related fear is very important. It's very important in driving these psychological symptoms. So, and many times you can actually combine peripheral treatments with central treatments if that's needed as well.
Yeah, that's a good point. So sometimes we just have to personalize. We have to, in general, personalize the approach depending on the patient. What are other general recommendations that you advise in managing overlapping disorders in patients with IBS in clinical practice? Is there anything that we didn't talk about that you think is important to mention?
I would like to again mention the holistic view and not only focus on symptoms that fits with your specialty as a doctor. You need to think outside, for us as gastroenterologists, outside the GI tract, and try to see a whole patient that we have in front of us. And ideally for patients then with more severe symptoms, we should have what you can call an integrated care approach, where we have a collaboration between different healthcare providers, gastroenterologists, pain specialists, dietitians, behavioral therapists, etc. So we need to work together, especially for the patients with the most severe symptoms.
I would say when I see a patient, a woman with lower abdominal symptoms, it is hard to determine what the comorbidity of a pelvic pain disorder, because there are a lot of pelvic pain disorders, and that region is sometimes hard to differentiate with gastrointestinal condition versus a pelvic pain condition, because there's so many of them. So I often refer to a gynecologist that I work with who is a pelvic pain expert. Do you find that more challenging?
Sometimes very challenging to dissect these symptoms. And I totally share that view to collaborate with different specialties. And gynecologists, that's one of their specialities and that I will collaborate with. So that's a very good point.
And in fact, the comorbidity often could just be what they call cross-sensitization of the, you know, visceral nerves or the afferent nerves. And that if you could get, they've shown an animal and human studies that if you irritate one of the organs, like say the bladder, that you could have increased colonic motor activity or vice versa. So there could be also a more localized shared overlap in the pelvic region.
Yeah, agree. And then you can target that overreactivity with combined treatment, if you put it like that, neuromodulators, for instance.
So I want to close with just asking you, what are the key messages that you believe regarding IBS and overlapping disorders that are good to convey to our audience, including what do you see in the future?
I think the most important thing is that you need to recognize that this overlap exists and you need to address it in your clinical history taking and also in your therapeutic approach to the patient and think holistically when you see these patients. And hopefully for the future, what we need is more treatment trials focusing on multiple symptoms. Now, all the treatment trials that we have are focusing on a very narrow symptom range and symptom pattern. And we need to have treatment trials that focus on a more broad symptom coexistence, if you put it like that. So see if we can treat these symptoms in different parts of the body with this common treatment option and have support from randomized clinical trials with that.
Yeah, I can see that's important, but it's probably challenging.
Challenging, but we need it.
We potentially could focus on one condition that's predominant, but also ask about the other symptoms. That's the first step, because often we don't ask about other symptoms, like say outside the gastrointestinal tract. And that would be something to do while you're asking about symptoms of the GI tract. Well, thank you so much, Magnus. This was really interesting information. This is something that I'm sure that our audience will love to hear about, because it's something we don't talk about that often, but it's really real in clinical practice. It's something we see all the time, particularly in patients, like you said, with more moderate, severe symptoms. Today, we had Dr. Simran discussing IBS and the overlapping disorders, not just of the GI tract, but also the outside of the GI tract, like fibromyalgia, migraine, headaches. It was wonderful to speak to Dr. Simran. Thank you so much for joining us. This is Dr. Lin Chang for In Discussion.
Thanks for listening to Medscape's In Discussion Irritable Bowel Syndrome podcast series with our host, Dr. Lin Chang. Be sure to look for more In Discussion episodes wherever you get your podcasts. Check out Medscape.com or the Medscape app for show notes, links, and more information on irritable bowel syndrome.